Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mission Control podcast presented by Apollo Media. You can follow us at Apollo HOU on Twitter. I'm your host, Josh Desmond. You can follow me on Twitter as well at Apollo Des 1. We have a pretty interesting conversation today with two unique individuals at Astros Future and at Astros Fans UK. We hear their story, their journey. We divulge and talk about some baseball and some things that happened over the offseason and what we're looking forward to this season. Just right now, I want to let all you guys know, probably the cat is not out of the bag yet, and I'll get in trouble for it, but we are actually going to be at the Houston Flying Saucer on March 21st, Astros Gear pop-up store. We've teased it a bit online, but I'm going to come out and say it now on the podcast, break the news. March 21st, we'll be partnering up with the Flying Saucer at 705 Main Street downtown. We'll be there from 1 to 6 p.m. Saturday, March 21st. We'll have our gear, three shirts. We're going to be out there drinking some beers, talking some sports. So you guys come on out. We'll have some pretty cool discount codes for you guys to use that come to the store. So come on out, have a good time. And that was at Houston Flying Saucer. That address is 705 Main Street. And that is Saturday, March 21st, 1 to 6 p.m. Super excited for that. Super excited for partnering with someone that wants to promote the Astros, wants to get the season going. So we'll have some of the Apollo Media crew there. You can come out, meet and greet. We'll have a good time. But today's podcast, it's a good conversation with Mr. Jimmy Price over at Astros Future and George over in the UK. It was a late night for him. He stayed up till almost 2 o'clock in the morning on his side of things, recording the podcast. So super thankful for that. Good conversation. So we'll go into it a little bit here in a second, but, Big week for Apollo Media, our second week of launch. I just want to say thank you, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Please hit that like button, the 5-star, leave a review. We should be up on Spotify and on the Apple Podcast as well. If not, then it'll be the next one. But please leave a review and 5 stars for us. We love you guys. And you know what? Let's just jump right into it. Mr. Jimmy Price. You can find him on Twitter at Astros Future. Jimmy, how's life? How's everything going on?
It's been pretty good, man. I'm excited. The season's getting started. Ready to get past this pretty rough off season and kind of get to some meaningful baseball.
Yeah, it's been a rocky off season to say the least. I talked to Josh a little about this on the first podcast, but I was like, if you would have told me that 3 years ago we have a championship, two pennants, and then all of a sudden we lose a manager and a GM in one fall swoop, I would have called you crazy. Yeah. But here we are, new GM, new manager. Hopefully Dusty can to take us to the promised land and get over his humps that never, he never got to lift that title.
Yeah, for sure. And, and I think that the things that we're doing and the stuff that y'all have put together with the website and the merchandise and stuff, I think has been real good on Twitter and on social media. I think it's kind of lifted the spirits of people. You can just see it. You get on Twitter, you get a vibe right now that people are ready for the season and, people are wearing the merchandise. They're, and they're wearing it proud.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've seen it's been really cool to see Apollo Media launch the way it has over the last 2 weeks, to create a team with the same sort of vision, same sort of passion, to have you and your 18,000 followers and what you've created over the years, to just come in and join the team like that is pretty crazy. It's all coming together, but also to see all the gear going out to everyone and photos coming in actually from West Palm Beach. That's what it's all about. I think I texted Josh last night. It was a picture, one of our AWO shirts in orbit right next to it. And I was just like, this could fall tomorrow, but like, this was the coolest thing like ever.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, tell us a little about Astro's future, what you guys, what you've done, what you created, your brand. Obviously, it's looking at the Astro's minor leaguers and their prospects and before they make that jump to Minute Maid Park. What was kind of your vision behind that? What was your thinking? Just kind of let the audience know what Jimmy Press was thinking.
Sure. So, you know, I've always been a fan of the prospects and you know, minor league system and minor league baseball in general. But, you know, around 2013, you know, the Astros were not good. The major league team was really terrible. The main thing we had to look forward to was the minor league system. The Astros had a lot of good prospects. They drafted well, they made some trades. So I was following it every day, watching games, looking at the box score, seeing how guys are doing. And I was on like an Astros forum at the time. And I'm thinking to myself, man, there's got to be a better way to like share this information with people, because I feel like people, you know, would want to know how these guys are doing. So I decided, screw it, and create a Twitter account and just start putting numbers out there and updating anyone who wants to follow on how the minor league system is doing. So I did that for a while, and it kind of took off, the retweets and everything, and the followers started to grow. So I did a little bit of writing for House of Houston, which is a little they cover like all of Houston sports. It's a fan sided website. But after a couple of years there, I kind of, you know, thought to myself, and I said, you know, if I have the ability to do it, why am I writing for a different website? Why don't I just create my own? So went ahead and, you know, put the money in and did all the stuff to create my website. I'm definitely, you know, no web designer or nothing like that. I'm not super tech savvy, but I was able to put together what I have now. So hopefully y'all can help me with that. But I was able to put that together back in 2016. It's been going for about 4 years now. And really just trying to keep everyone up to date on the prospects and in the minor league system. But also, you know, I mean, I like to talk Astros too, obviously. You know, 2017 was great. The last 4 or 5 years have been phenomenal. You know, I mean, it's not only do Absolutely. I want to see them succeeding in the minor leagues, but of course I want to see it when it gets to the pros. You know, it's just cool to follow the guys, you know, when they're first getting drafted and they're on their way through the system, you know, and not necessarily just the top guys like Correa and Bregman. But when you see the guys like a Josh James, who was a late round pick, and see, you know, him, I don't want to say struggle, but he wasn't a legit prospect until later on, you know, in his career when he made it up to AAA and he, you know, started touching 9,900 miles per hour. So to see those guys go through the minor league system, you know, is one of the best things, you know, and I just try to share what I enjoy with everyone else and keep them up to date on how the system's doing, how the top prospects are doing, and hopefully people are enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you touched on something. A lot of people don't realize the grind of it all. I mean, you have the Correas, the Bregmans, you know, that the Kyle Tuckers, the fandom, the crowd knows, okay, this is who we drafted. This is, you know, the next superstar. They're going to be in Minute Maid in 2 or 3 years, where you have guys that are grinding year after year, bus ride after bus ride to some small town in the United States just to maybe get a spring training invite, to maybe show up and show out. And it's tough. I played some college ball. I have some friends that actually are in the majors now, but I mean, it took them 5-6 years and they were top prospects. I mean, they were guys in the top 30 for an organization, and they would tell me like, hey, I don't know how I'm gonna make rent this month. Like, wait, you're a major league baseball player. And then yeah. You hear the stories and you hear it time and time again, and it's just the grind of it all. And it's not all sunshine and rainbows. I mean, once you get into the show, it's, you know, that's the life, that's baseball heaven. But to get there, it's, you're fighting and clawing to get there, and it's tough.
Really, right. Really, you know, and if you follow the draft at all, you know, you'll see what the guys are signing for, and the people in the top 10 rounds, and, you know, they sign for pretty good bonuses. Obviously, once you get closer to the 10, you know, the bonuses are getting lower. But when you start getting those guys that are drafted in that, you know, 10 to 40 range, you know, they're signing for maybe $10,000, $15,000, you know, and to some people, maybe that sounds like a good chunk of change. But once you put it in your bank account and you go, you know, go to work and you get paid what minor league players are getting paid. And then you're having to make rent and everything on top of that. Like you talk about moving around. Yeah, it's definitely a grind, but I think, you know, that's one of the good things about baseball, I guess, is that it's, you have to go through a different grind to get to the major league level, unlike you do in the NBA and you know, in the NFL, you know, that where they're primarily just college and then you go in. The MLB is different, but I think that also kind of creates a what's the word I'm looking for? I think people appreciate the game. You know, they get up to the league and they know what it took, and they can look around at the 25 guys in the clubhouse and know that they all had to go through the same grind. Like you said, I mean, Carlos Correa was the number one overall pick. Yeah, he signed for whatever it was at the time, $4.5 million as the number one overall pick. But he didn't make his debut until midway in 2015. So, I mean, it took him 3 years in the minors. You know, it took Bregman, who was at number two overall pick, took him quite a bit of time to get to the majors too. So, the grind is something special. And, you know, I just, like I said, hopefully, with my Twitter and stuff, I've had family members and friends follow, and that's kind of rewarding for myself, seeing that, you know, they're enjoying seeing that I'm putting these numbers out, because, you know, their family, their son is, you know, across the country playing baseball for, you know, pennies on the dollar, really, when it comes down to what they're getting paid for where they're living at. So just to see them, you know, to be able to share, I guess, the love of baseball, you know, with the Twitter community, but also with their family has been real nice.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing you touched on, and it kind of clicked when you were talking about that, where you kind of created this in that perfect age of social media, where Twitter's about, Facebook, you know, was obviously there at its prime, but no one was kind of doing what you're doing, and it's tough for families. I mean, you have, you know, high A, low A, class A, double A, triple A, and then you have rookie ball and instructional leagues. You have all these players spread out through an organization, and the parents and their family and their friends, they've been watching their kid and their buddies playing baseball their entire lives. And now you can't catch it. You're probably not going to get a game cast. You probably get lucky if you get it on video at this time in the, like, 2011, 2012. But to be able to compile the stats on your end and be like, oh, hey, look, Nick went 2 for 3 tonight in, you know, North Carolina somewhere, in, you know, some small town. Like, that's got to be such an incredible feeling on your end, because you're informing the parents. I mean, someone that's always been there for their kid and always watched every single pitch, and now that their kid's halfway across the country and some league, you know, they can't necessarily do that all the time, and you're there to fill that void, to get that information out there to the masses.
Yeah, that's definitely a rewarding part of it. You know, I've had some of I've met some of the parents. I've had some of them message me through Twitter and stuff, and they've all been, you know, supportive and thankful for, you know, just putting the numbers out there. And then I think they enjoy seeing other people enjoy it too. You know, you put out a tweet about, like you said, some mid-round prospect, and, you know, it gets 10 retweets, and then they look at it and say, you know, dang, you know, people care about what my son is doing. It's not just me as the, you know, the dad or mom that cares about what they're doing. So, that's one of the, you know, that's a good thing about it. But just in general, just, I love the idea of prospects, because there's always optimism, right? Right now we're going into the 2020 season. The Astros are ranked like 27th or 28th system in all of baseball, I think, by Baseball America or MLB Pipeline, one of them. Obviously I think that ranking is a little bit low, but I look at the system and I have a hard time ranking 30 guys, because I see a lot of guys that have a ton of upside. And I think that's the best part about minor league baseball, is there's always optimism. Every year there's going to be some guy that comes out of nowhere that ends up being really good, or a guy that struggled last year and has a breakout year. You know, and they're doing it. I mean, they play for a team, but at the end of the day, it's essentially for themselves, because they're trying to get themselves to the major league level. So just the optimism that's there every year is something that I really enjoy watching.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think the biggest – tons of questions for you, but what was one prospect, and I'm not saying the Correas, the Bregmans, but what was that one prospect that you were harping on before anyone else? Like, for instance, for me last year, I got to spend all of spring training in West Palm Beach for my job, and so I kind of was following up on Yordan when, you know, we had first got him, and I was like, man, this guy just is the build and the stats. And I was like, this guy can hit. And then to see him play day in and day out last year in spring, I was like, there's no question this guy deserves to be on the 25 man roster. And I spent to my 100 followers at that time, I was like, this guy needs to be in the big leagues. Obviously there's things around it where you know, organizations keep players down for the rules to get more control. But I was like, this guy's got it. So what was one player, like, when you first started out, was like, oh, this guy's it, before anyone else was kind of on him?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, you know, you bring up a perfect one in Yordan Alvarez. And when we talk about optimism and upside and everything, when the Astros, they traded Josh Fields, you know, a guy who it's not like he was dominating. They get this guy from Cuba who's got an excellent build, lefty with power, and you're like, the upside is there. And the next thing you know, he's blossomed into a fantastic prospect and he wins Rookie of the Year. I think the hard part about it is the Astros have, you know, they've called up a lot of the top guys, you know, the Correas, the Bregmans, you know, Kyle Tucker, George Springer, all those guys who came up. But a lot of the guys that have kind of came out of nowhere, they've brought those guys up. You know, they drafted them late in the draft and then turned them into legitimate prospects. And then they end up trading them for Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke, or Mike Fiers and stuff. But I mean, if you know, like I was a real big fan of Ramon Laureano, like when the Astros drafted him, and mm-hmm. throughout the process. And I really loved what he did, mainly because, you know, he had a big arm, good fielder, could hit for some power, could run, and just was a good prospect. And I really liked him. I was higher on him than a lot of people. Unfortunately, he didn't get to, you know, get to the, you know, do show what he could do with the Astros, but he's doing it with another club now. But even, absolutely. I'm looking back at some of my old articles, and one of my breakout prospects for 2017 was Christian Javier, and now it's 2020, and, you know, we're talking about him as one of the best prospects in the system with a chance to make it as maybe the number five starter, if not now, maybe in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just to see guys like that, you know, that was a guy that I thought had a lot of upside, and fortunately, you know, he's met that upside. And then Abraham Toro Hernandez, you know, Abraham Toro was another guy that I really felt was, you know, had a lot in his bat and had a lot of upside, and a guy that I thought was, you know, potentially going to be a breakout guy. I thought he was going to break out in 2018. He had a solid season, but then 2019, last year, obviously had his huge season, came up and made an impact, and, looks like a guy that hopefully can stick around. So, every year I try to put out an article, you know, three or four prospects who I think can be a breakout prospect. And obviously they're not all going to hit, but so far I've had pretty decent luck, you know, every year, at least nailing one of them. And like I said, that's the beauty of it, I guess. But, you know, the Astros have, at least so far, and we'll have to see how James Click and his company does it. But we've seen them take the guys that, you know, they haven't traded the top prospects. They didn't trade, you know, Correa or Bregman or Tucker or Whitley. You know, they've traded the guys that made themselves into legitimate prospects and then ended up moving them for players. So a lot of those guys that I liked ended up getting traded. You know, Franklin Perez was another one, but he got traded for Verlander. But, you know, even then, I mean, that's still value for the organization. So, if I had to choose one, I guess the number one early on was Ramon Laureano. That was a guy I was a big fan of early on when I got into the writing. But even, I mean, I've gone back just for the heck of it and searched on my site, Yordan Alvarez. And I saw the article that I wrote when we traded for him. And I'm in the article talking, and once again, I'm an optimist, so I'm always looking at the bright side, but I'm like, you know, lefty, 6'5", you know, big power, looks like he could be the, you know, the first baseman of the future. And I wrote that, you know, the year that they traded for him. And obviously I'm throwing it on a wall and hoping it sticks, really. With a guy like that, because at that point in time, you know, he barely played. I think he didn't even play in the States. But, you know, you look at the upside and, you know, if you have an optimistic approach, there's always somebody who looks like they're going to, you know, be a breakout star or going to make it their way. And every year, I think the Astros have been fortunate that they've drafted really well late in the rounds. They've done well with some of the international signings. And they've always had guys that are outperforming expectations.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you hit the nail on the head on that, where Jeff had a perfect balance of drafting well, hitting on your draft picks, but also the international draft and getting those guys in and kind of, I mean, it was tanking before tanking was, you know, popular. Everyone was at that time was like, I mean, the Astros are, you know, a super AAA team, really charting out who they were. But I mean, the process works. I mean, it takes years, like we saw. But the process does work, and I'm not on your website right now. You can, you know, find Jimmy's work at astrosfuture.com. Looking at your top five pitching prospects for 2020, I mean, everyone on here, though, I mean, the top four could be a starter in the majors. Like, I mean, it's Forrest, Jose, Christian Javier, Brian Abreu. I mean, these guys could very well fill out the four and five spots that we have to fill out this year, and I wouldn't lose any sleep over any of these guys taking the rubber.
Yeah, and once you nailed it right there, was saying that the only one that was a high pick is Forrest Whitley. You know, Javier was signed for a pretty low amount. Or Kitty was same thing. Belak was an 11th round pick. So the Astros have done well, and hopefully it continues to. And I have faith in James Click that he will, but hopefully it continues to. You know, where they use those mid round picks well, and they do well in the international signing. So that's, you know, you can draft well in the first two rounds, but to really build a deep system and a system that you can count on year in, year out to supply the team with prospects and to have prospects able to trade, you have to hit on those mid to late round guys, and you have to hit on some of those international signings. And fortunately, they've been able to do that so far.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got a Twitter question coming in from David Silva. His question to you is this. He goes, for Astros future, who are you looking at this year to have a breakout year in the minors?
Well, I don't want to give out too much because I'm going to have an article coming out on that. Okay. But a guy that I've kind of started to look at, Chandler Taylor is an outfielder that the Astros drafted a couple years ago, and he's a little bit older than your typical prospect. But you know, if you read on him, you get intrigued. He's a lefty that stands about, like, I think a little over 6 foot, but he's, you know, got a nice build, huge power and a huge arm in the outfield. So, you know, when you look at that, you see two tools that you could project a guy could take, you know, that he can use those tools to, you know, get himself up to the big league level. So Chandler Taylor is a guy that hopefully he was in high A last year. If he makes his way up to double A this year, and really, you know, shows off that power. He has to cut down on the strikeouts a little bit, but a big arm in the outfield, big power. I mean, he's kind of got that Adam Dunn mold to him, that, you know, could stick in right field. So I'm really interested to see how he does. And like I said, I'm going to have an article coming out with about three or four of them, but I'll leave that one right there.
Okay, perfect. And you can find that at astrosfuture.com. And of course, Apollo Media will be promoting that. I'm looking at him right now, Chandler Taylor. I mean, 6'1", 210, bats left, throws left, went to Alabama. I mean, I'm buying all the stock. I'm telling you right now, I'm all in. I got the Jimmy stamp of approval. I'm going to back up the Brinks trucks, and we're buying all the stock.
Yeah, so my top 30 will be coming out on Monday, but then the following week I plan on doing the breakout prospects, and I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into it to see. I'm not going to talk on them, but I'll throw out a couple names. Nathan Perry, a catcher, and Blair Henley, a relief pitcher that the Astros may turn him into a starter from the University of Texas. I'll just throw out those couple names.
Blair at Texas, and he's got some excellent stuff.
Yeah, you know, and the Astros got him, and, you know, they didn't have to sign him to a huge, you know, huge bonus and everything. And he didn't pitch a ton last year in the minors, but he's got the makings of a guy who could have a breakout season. So that's a couple names that'll be on that list.
Nice. I guess you kind of approach it to a almost like a scout would, but you were writing during the change of. Because when I was in high school in 2011, when teams could draft, they could throw any money in the world. Now there's a slot money for every individual slot in the draft, and it kind of changes the whole aspect of pretty much everything. Now you don't have kids signing in the 15th round for $1 million because a team, you know, squirreled money away to pay this kid to sway him from college. And now, you know, you have, you know, the allotted 60K or whatever it is in that slot. But seeing that shift and that dynamic – on the overall aspect, what did you see on the trickle down effect during the Astros? Like, how did they approach it? Did you see that? Did you see that change, or you were just still day to day? Like, okay, this is not really a big difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you bring up a good point, and something that the Astros have done. It's going to be hard the next couple of years with the loss of picks, but they've tried to get guys that will sign for underslot, you know, in the second, third round. And they've kind of focused on guys that were, you know, college juniors that have high floors, not high ceilings. And they've signed some of those guys for underslot, save money, and then use that money later on to sign a guy higher. Perfect example, honestly, is when they drafted Correa first overall, they signed him for $4.5 million. I don't remember what the exact slot was for that year, but I think they saved like $500,000. Well, that $500,000 that they saved, they flipped and they signed Lance McCullers, when they drafted him in the supplemental round. So that's the way the Astros have kind of approached it. I think a lot of teams have, and unfortunately, that's going to be a a burden on us the next couple of years since we don't have picks in the first or second round. But another guy that they did that recently with was Colin Barber, outfielder that they drafted and they signed for overslot. So that's kind of the way they approach it, is they would try to save money in those first few rounds and then get one of the guys for an overslot deal a little bit later on.
Yeah, for sure. And in that draft, I kind of have two little stories. One, I'll keep his name anonymous. He's still in the organization, but he was actually drafted in the 20th round. He had tore his labrum in high school, but the Astros gave him $900K signing bonus. So that was the offer. He turned it down to go to college. Had a great career at a high Division I school, but then the change of the slot money came about, so he lost all leverage. And got, you know, he had a pretty decent signing bonus for any 21-year-old, you know, but it was not the $900K that he turned down 3 years before. But then on the other side, I had a buddy that was a couple of years older than me. His name's Tyler Naquin. He's an outfielder for the Indians. And he got drafted, I believe, like maybe the last round, second to last round out of high school. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'll sign for a bus ticket. And we were talking to him. We're like, you have a full ride to A&M. Like, we know, you know, who you are, what kind of player you are. And he was kind of torn between sign for a bus ticket and go grind in the minors or go to A&M. He ended up going to A&M, was a 2- or 3-time All-American, and got drafted 15th overall in that Correa draft. And it was just I saw two sides of it. I was just like, this is a different beast. But it's crazy, like you said, how the whole Astros core kind of came about through the taking less money and moving elsewhere to create a championship core.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the Astros worked it the way they had to. And, and they worked it to the benefit. I'm interested to see how James Click approaches this draft coming up without the first, you know, two picks. But I have confidence that they're still going to be able to get legitimate prospects. We've seen they're probably going to be really active in the international market. And you've seen the rumors out there that they're projected to sign Pedro Leon, who's a big outfielder from Cuba, who honestly looks like a fantastic prospect. A guy asked me, I think yesterday, would he be a top 100 prospect? And I absolutely think he would if the Astros signed him. So I'm really interested the rumors are out there. They seem to be true. The people reporting them are usually not wrong. But I really, really hope that they're accurate, because that would be a huge boost to our system without, you know, like I said, without having that first and second round pick for the next 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Essentially, he's your first round pick. I mean, when I saw the original punishments coming out, I was really more worried about how they were going to affect the international signing, because if they started taking those picks away, that's almost a death sentence to a organization on a prospect standpoint, because you're taking away the picks from the draft, at least your first two, and then you're taking away the international side of things where a stream of ball players come from. That's where it could really, really hamper you. So when I saw the initial punishments, I was like, okay, that I can deal with that. Because right now you have a guy that's going to be a complete stud if we do sign him.
Yeah, I saw someone say that that, you know, if he was eligible for this upcoming draft, you know, he would probably be like a top five pick, which is pretty phenomenal. I know a lot of people are pissed off that the Astros still have the ability to sign guys like that. But like you said, I mean, the punishment they got is what the commissioner decided, and those first two picks for the next 2 years, they're going to hurt. But at the same time, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine about it and just thinking, you took away four picks from the Astros, right? Well, that's four players that could have had the opportunity to, you know, join a major league organization. So it makes me wonder, you know, would Manfred, you know, decide to do something with those picks? Like, I mean, you know, give them to another team, you know, later on, or would they, you know, would the Astros get two extra picks in the 40th round or something? Just because at the end of the day, that, like I said, that's four picks that could have been used to allow some, maybe a 22-year-old who just graduated college, an opportunity to play Major League Baseball, and now he's not going to get that chance. Well, you know, he may as an undrafted free agent, but yeah, if we would have lost the international money, that would have that definitely would have put a big dent in the system. So hopefully they really, they're projected to sign him, and then Dory Lorenzo is another, and some other prospects that they're working on, because that's going to be where our talent's coming from, at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I think where, like you said earlier, like how Baseball America has the Astros, you know, ranked 27th, 28th of the farm system wise, but the cupboard isn't dry, and I hope everyone listening realizes that, because the Astros have used and used pieces to get arms, Greinke and Verlander. Even in the Flyers trade, we gave away, you know, Josh Hader. But the guys are there. The guys that are not considered prospects anymore because they're on the major league roster and they're young and they're, you know, under team control for a long time. So it's not like the window is essentially closed and right. Win now. I mean, yeah, essentially with Greinke and Verlander, they're up there in age, but the core behind them is not an aging core like, you know, in 2005 with the Astros, where you have just a lot of veterans. It's the core still there, and the younger guys are not considered prospects, but they're in the show. And so I'm really excited to see what Click's going to do. I think he has the same mindset, the same forward thinking, analytical thinking.
Yeah.
And the future's bright. I think the future's bright.
What you say about that, I think, is a perfect example is if Kyle Tucker didn't, exhaust his prospect status last year and he was still a prospect this year, you know, where would he rank or where would the Astros rank then if they had a, you know, a top 20 prospect outfielder like Kyle Tucker still in the system? But I think the Astros have done a phenomenal job of taking pitchers and turning them into prospects. If you next week, when I put out my top 30 prospects, but not just mine, you could go look at anyone else's top 30s. But when you look and you go through the system, I mean, out of those 30 prospects, if I had to, I mean, 15 to 20 of them are going to be pitchers, and a lot of them have pitched at high levels and have had a lot of success. And a lot of the guys are unheralded pitchers that weren't drafted high. Brandon Belak, Brett Conine, just to name a few. Tyler Ivey, he was drafted a little higher, but even then, he's got a lot of upside. So I know a lot of the main guys will look at the Astros system, and I think some of it is projection as well, and they're projecting. Obviously, the Astros won't have the first two picks in the next 2 years, but I think the system is a little bit better than the 28th overall. I'm definitely biased. I'm not going to hide that fact, but I do think there's plenty of depth there. Yeah, the window is definitely not closed, and there's plenty of solid prospects, pitching prospects right now at the minor league system. And then, like you said, if they didn't make the trade for Greinke and they still had Seth Beer and Bukauskas and Josh Rojas, you know, where would what would the system look like right now? And I mean, you know, you add those three guys and then you add, Kyle Tucker and the system is probably, you know, maybe top 10 or something like that. So
exactly.
Yeah, the system, it's essentially currency. It's currency for your major league team, and it's currency for, you know, to trade for pitchers or whoever you want to trade for to continue to build your major league team. So I think they'll get it back where it needs to be. I think James Click is going to do well in this spot. But I definitely wouldn't look at it and think, man, the system's dried up. There's nobody there, because that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on. I know we're going to be doing this a lot. Thank you for all the work behind the scenes and just helping with us in Apollo Media. You know, you're a great partner, a great, great site and Twitter account. And just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's incredible. Yeah,
I appreciate it. Y'all have some phenomenal stuff. Just some of the stuff that y'all put together for me so far and the merchandise that I've seen on the site. And everything. I mean, it's awesome. I think y'all are doing some really good stuff. I'm very proud to be a part of it and be partnering with y'all. So I'm definitely looking forward to see what the future holds for us. But any other time you need me on, we'll try to make it a more common occurrence, and we'll keep talking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can follow Jimmy at Astros Future. Also, he has his merch line up at the Apollo Houston, ApolloHOU.com. In our store, you can grab some Astros Future gear over there. Jimmy, thank you again, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're taking it international, folks. Mr. George at Astros Fans UK himself is making the late night call on his end. It's almost near 1 o'clock in the morning. George, thank you for coming on. Thank you for staying up late with us today.
Absolute pleasure. Really happy to be on this pod and just excited about the whole Apollo Media movement.
Yeah, it's week two of Apollo Media launching. I think we reached out to you a couple months ago, me and Josh, and we're like, hey, George is the name and face overseas. Let's try to loop him in and bring him on board. And I can't thank you enough for being so open and obviously, you know, you had your first piece on launch week that went super, super great, had a lot of views, just to hear your story. But I can't thank you enough for everything you've done on the backside of things.
No, I really appreciate that. It's it definitely right back at you, because honestly, I feel, as I put in that blog, I feel honoured that you guys are happy to have me on as a non-Houstonian. I'm still yet to make my Houston debut, so I was originally looking to try and get there finally after 20 years this year. Unfortunately, family commitments meant it was not possible, but I've sort of tried to stake the claim with my wife to say that 2021 is definitely the year I will finally be making it out there.
Absolutely, and by then, you know, Apollo Media will have a big old office. You'll be able to come in and have your little workstation. We'll have your tea ready for you, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, man, I think I'll have my PA looking after everything, and yes, that sounds great.
Oh, that's great, bro. That's great. Oh man, I guess the first question, I bet everyone is thinking it. I know you touched on it a bit in your blog, and we'll link it as well under the podcast. But how does a gentleman like yourself, thousands of miles away, become an Astro fan?
Yeah, it's just the origin story of all baseball fans in the UK not having sort of fingertip access to baseball growing up. They're all interesting stories. Mine is it goes back to when baseball was being broadcast. The feeds from ESPN was being broadcast on Sundays and Wednesdays on, we'd say terrestrial television. You guys would probably call it network television. And yeah, it was just refreshing to see a sport which I didn't have any knowledge of. I played a lot of cricket, so having been involved in another bat and ball game, watching baseball completely fresh, I was intrigued. I wanted to see what it was about. Had no connection to America whatsoever myself, so I knew that if I wanted to get into the game, that I'd have to choose a team to support. And I was never going to go the bandwagon route. So the Yankees were dominant at that time, so they were definitely off the table. And it was actually just watching, particularly Mike Hampson, because in that sort of latter part of the '99 season, he had a great year. I know Jose Lima had a great year. I think they both got 20 wins, if I'm not mistaken. The fact that Mike Hampson was such a good hitter as well for a pitcher was something also that attracted me. And I thought, well, let's look at this team. You've got an exciting team. You've got the Killer Bees. You've got a great brand of baseball that they're playing. They're not, you know, they never won a championship. So something to really get behind there. I decided in that off season that I was going to, you know, give it a shot with the Astros and see how it went. And then lo and behold, obviously Mike Hampton got traded to the Mets. So before the season started in 2000. So I had a decision to make, and I was sort of posed with the conundrum: do I follow Mike Hampton to the Mets or do I stick with the Astros? I sort of made a decision. I said, no, you know, I'm going to be an Astros fan, and 20 years later, here I am.
That's an incredible journey, man. I mean, I think every fan and everyone listening kind of has their own origin story. Obviously, yours is different than others, being in another continent, in another country. But it's incredible. We're so lucky to have you and what everything you do. I mean, you can probably touch on it a little bit more, but just from my 10,000-foot view, I mean, it seems like your hands are in a lot of pots in the UK by, you know, promoting the game, one, but finding Astro fans, finding fans for other teams, and just you have a pretty strong community over there.
We really do, and I'm glad that you touched upon that, because that is something which I take very seriously. Just to sort of briefly explain to anyone who's not familiar, I obviously am at Astros Fans UK on Twitter, and that's kind of my bread and butter, what I do. I started that account in June 2017. It was part of an event here which they were inviting to fans of all 30 teams to try to come together ahead of this MLB Battlegrounds, which was a slightly bizarre home run derby that they held in a place in London called Hyde Park, which so in the lead up to that, they tried to get this going. We met up at this event, all these different fans from different teams, and we'd started up our Twitter accounts, and we made a decision, a few of us then and there, that we really wanted to try and get something going in terms of like an organic kind of grassroots fan movement to try and cultivate, develop, and expand the game. And I've sort of taken that further upon myself with what I do with Astros Fans UK, and I take immense amount of pride in it to actually try and find, unearth, and connect every single Astros fan in the UK. We're up to about 100. I think it's 137 or 138 that I've found on Twitter, and I know that there are more on Facebook and probably on Reddit and Instagram. So I'm constantly trying to think of ways to expand my kind of reach and scope in that regard. And I just love the interactions that I get online. I wouldn't do what I do if it wasn't for the great Astros fans that are out there, both in the UK and also worldwide. We just had Astros Fans DE1, which is a German sort of branch startup. We've got Astros Fans France. We've got two different Astros Fans Brazil. I've spoken to fans in, I think, Malaysia and Singapore. And it's honestly fantastic. Whilst the numbers are relatively sparse in terms of how they're spread, I know that there are more out there, and I know that the more we connect everyone, and I always make sure to introduce them to the home Astros fan base in Houston and across the US. I know that we can kind of build this brand together, and I'm sort of trying to do that job in terms of letting the Astros themselves know that I'm doing that job as well. And I feel like that's getting more success. And in terms of the UK scene, yeah, I'm part of a group which we started from that 2017 time called MLB UK Community. You can find us at MLB UK Community on Twitter. We also have a podcast which we started a month or so ago called A Podcast to Be Named Later at PTBNL UK, which I'd certainly recommend having a listen to if you're interested to sort of hear what some UK viewpoints are on the game. I was just on there last week for the AL West preview, obviously talking about the Astros, and it's fantastic. We've got our live watch events movement called hashtag MLB Meetups UK, which again, I do all the graphical stuff, all the promo for it, and we are so committed to developing that, because we hold our events, MLB UK Community, in London, but there are also events which we push all over the country, all across the UK. We've had ones in Manchester, in Birmingham, in Nottingham, even up in Scotland, in Glasgow, looking to get ones in Edinburgh. So it's a labour of love. We, you know, none of us get paid anything for it, but we work really, really hard at it. We've got good connections with MLB London, who are the sort of UK arm of MLB. We've got the London series coming up again in June. So yeah, I mean, we are very, very passionate about what we do. We don't ever consider ourselves better than the home fans in the US. It's just a case of we approach it in our own way, and we're really committed to developing that community aspect, and just sort of circling back to the Astro side of things. That's what I do, and I love the interactions I get during Astros games, because I have that kind of sort of slightly frenetic and frantic live texting I do during games, which live tweeting, sorry, I do during games, which people seem to enjoy. So bring on the next this season.
Yeah, it's exciting, and to hear that passion and everything you're doing. I mean, like you said, you're not doing it for the paycheck. You're doing it because it's a passion of yours, and that's why, you know, we had to, when me and Josh started at Apollo Media, and how everything came about, we're like, let's find people that, yeah, they're talented, but two, they have to have passion. They have to have what our vision is lined up, you know, with theirs, and the passion, and the talent may not be there for, you know, but you can teach that. We can find a spot for someone on the team, but you can't fake the passion. And obviously what you've done in the UK, and you know, they say it's America's pastime, but it's really, I think it's an outdated statement, because it's baseball's so global now. It has its reaches all over the globe, like you said, from Malaysia to Brazil to the UK. I mean,
Australia,
it's everywhere. Japan. I mean, it's, baseball is obviously everywhere, but the Astro reach, it's crazy to hear it, but it doesn't shock me, because everyone has their own story. It's a game that anyone can fall in love with, and especially in a country where football is the you know, premier sport, and then you have, you know, cricket and other sports. To see how, I mean, it's not like we talked off air, you're a Chelsea fan, but it's not, you're not secluded to that. You know, you also have such a deep passion for the Astros, and it's really remarkable to see, man.
Again, I appreciate that. It's just a case of, I try and separate things I love what I do. And you're absolutely right about baseball being such an approachable game from an international standpoint. I don't think it is America's pastime, but at the same time, there's something intangible which it just appeals. I don't know whether it's the kind of the pace of the game that kind of allows someone to get involved without kind of being swept away. It allows you to learn at a reasonable pace without being overwhelmed. I mean, yeah, I think once you get that bug for it, you're in.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think the big thing is that it's like you said, there's for me, it was my dad played college baseball. So there's a baseball in my hand when I was born, they say. So like it was never forced upon me. It was never, you're going to do this. I just naturally fell in love with it. And I wouldn't trade any memories that I have of traveling all over the country, playing in these tournaments. Looking back, my parents sacrificed all this stuff for new gear and to make sure that I'm playing in some tournament that, you know, at 7 years old, I'm going to forget about, you know, in a week or two, but to then be able to go through the high school ranks and go play college ball and to see my dad and my mom still in the stands. Like, I don't care if I went 3-for-3 or 0-for-3. I mean, at the time I probably did because I was so competitive, but looking back, I was like, I'm just glad my parents got to see that. And we got to have that moment because we were so connected by the sport. And to hear everyone else's stories of how they fell in love with the game, how, you know, what makes them a fan of not only the Astros, but baseball. Because, I mean, when my grandfather, when he see lights, he'd be driving home, see the lights here in America for the baseball fields. He'd just pull over and go watch a game for two or three innings. And I was just like, who's playing? He's like, oh, I don't know. I just, you know, saw the lights and, you know, I caught a couple innings. Like you don't get that with other sports. You don't, you know, so it's really cool to hear your story and your passion behind it all.
That's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I did have a few questions before we jump into our Twitter segment, but I got to know, 2017, mm-hmm. we're about to win the World Series. What was Game 7 like for you over there? Obviously, it's a West Coast start, so it's a late night for you to begin with. What was that night for you?
Well, time-wise, it's going to sound strange to say it because I think it was something like 1 o'clock first pitch, but not as bad as during the regular season because the regular season West Coast games start at about 3 a.m., which is that's a killer. Even for me, that's difficult. In terms of Game 7, what did that mean for me? Yeah, it was surreal. It was just surreal. I finished around 4 a.m. I was watching it at home on my own with wife and son sleeping, so I wasn't really able to give it the full vocals that I might wanted to do, but I was just honestly, I was in tears. It was a magical night, a magical moment. No one can ever take that away, regardless of other things. And it was just strange because I was so nervous in Game 6 and in Game 7. The way it kind of unfolded, I was nervous when McCullers was throwing at hitters for fun, pretty much. I don't know, was it three or four guys he hit? I forget.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a miracle that he got out one of those innings unscathed. But once we did get through those first four or five innings, and when Charlie Morton came in, it was just so serene. It was almost like, I shouldn't be feeling like this. This should be more nerve-wracking than it is. We just sealed it in a way which was such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I hate to bring slightly more painful, well, much more painful memories in. It was kind of the opposite of what happened a few months ago in Game 7. And I just wish we could have been able to do the same there. But yeah, in terms of 2017, yeah, what an unreal experience.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, I was in downtown at what bar was I at downtown? I think it was at the tavern right across the stadium. And mm-hmm. I like you said, I was more nervous for game six than game seven. Game seven, I was just like, I don't know why I'm not nervous. I mean, I threw up before the game, and I'm not even playing. I was just watching. And game seven, it was just, okay, I'm not nervous right now. I don't know why that doesn't make sense. It may have been the beer you were drinking. Right. But yeah, it felt right.
I think it just felt right. It was strange. I was feeling nervous in the lead up to it, and this is going to sound strange, but honestly, for me, it was true. I think it was Michael Costa who put a tweet up ahead of the game saying that we were going to be wearing the orange jerseys, and as soon as I saw that, I just felt good about it. I don't know why. I just felt good about it, and it, you know, that was kind of how it unfolded. It was a moment for me that I won't forget. I just felt a kind of calmness after seeing that, and it's kind of weird because it shouldn't have any effect on it at all. But it just was a feeling. It was there.
Yeah, and it's we had a saying with my group of buddies, and at this time, like my 100 Twitter followers. But it was Heartbreak Houston. Like Houston's gonna break your heart. They always do. They always find a way. Like it's no matter what happens. But even then, I was just like, I don't have that feeling that I usually feel. Like it was just like a sense of calm. And then how the game, like you said, McCullers getting out of jams. And then I think it was late in the fifth or sixth. Someone hit a rocket right at Yuli, and they had a runner on second. I think it was still like at a point where I was like, okay, I'm not comfortable. But like if they get a little momentum, because it's all about momentum in playoffs, obviously.
Absolutely.
And I was just like, that the ball's just finding our glove tonight. And it's a catch-22 because this past year, it just seemed like everything we hit found the Nationals glove. And I was just like, it's 2017 for the Nationals all over. Like, everything is going their way. And you just got to tip your cap sometimes. Mm. It's sickening. But to be eight, I take that 10 times out of 10, being eight outs away from the World Series, you give me that opportunity.
I think you're absolutely right in terms of that. I mean, that game seven, like I said, we were just hitting rockets everywhere and couldn't find the gaps with men in scoring position. And I mean, even the second run we did get, I think Rendon got a little tip on his glove, which just stopped it from getting down all the way down the line into the corner, which held it to just the one extra run, which scored. And it's still very painful. But hey, you know what can we do? Like I said, it's kind of like every year, the team that wins it has destiny on their side, and it
absolutely
the Nationals did. I thought having come back to 3-2 in the series, having swept them in DC, I thought that we would, you know, we'd woken up and would be able to seal it, but we just couldn't shake them off at home. And it's one of those things which I'll never understand how we didn't win the World Series that year. I never ever will. But I feel, despite all that's happened, I feel strangely positive going into this season. I really do.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, as much as the turmoil and the suspensions and the scandal, whatever you want to call it, we have officially are the worst hated person in the entire world. I think we're on FBI's top 10 most wanted right now. But I feel comfortable. Yeah, there's some question marks in the bullpen. There's question marks on the back end of the rotation, but we've returned everyone in our starting lineup. I mean, like, and we're eight outs away from the World Series, and we went 0 for October over runners in scoring position. Like, the offense is going to be there. Yeah, maybe some games we will have to outslug a team. Okay, that's fine. We can go toe to toe. But
big time, yeah. Bring that
on. I just feel like if we can develop someone on that on the back end and kind of the bridge in the bullpen, as much as everyone's going to hate us on during the season, this team's going to win. This team's built to win. They know how to win. They know how to win in high pressure situations. I feel like people think that the Astros are going to just fold. The crowd's a little more rowdy. We just spent the last, you know, 4 years in October baseball. It's not going to be a crowd they haven't seen before.
Exactly.
It may get annoying. Yeah, it's the regular season, but it's nothing they haven't seen. They're not. I'd be more worried if this team was 2017, where they're a little bit younger, you know, more wide eyed. But they're October veterans.
Definitely. I think you look at the lineup, obviously, offensively, if you're just going through it to a man, Springer, Bregman, Altuve, Brantley, Gurriel, Alvarez, Correa, and then you're even adding in if Reddick can find a bit of form. I mean, it's you've got an incredible offensive lineup ready to explode pretty much any time, almost 1 through 9. And then looking at our starters, okay, aging Verlander and Greinke, but at the same time, I don't think you're going to see an overnight drop off from either of them. Big question mark, can Lance McCullers come back off his Tommy John surgery and hit the ground running, or is it going to be a tricky season for him? That's a big question. If it does work out for Lance this year, watch out, because I think I've got massive faith in Jose Urquidy. I'm hugely excited to see what he's got in store for us this season after a really good debut season. I mean, his performance in the World Series game he pitched in was superb. Like you said, back end of the rotation, right at the back end, fifth man could be an issue. I mean, but I don't see that being a sort of stumbling block that would be a major problem in the season, to be quite honest. I think we've got enough depth through the first three or four to more than comfortably carry us through the regular season. Like you said, in terms of getting to the back end of our relievers in the bullpen, the sort of setup guys, it could be an issue. I think if Abreu can kind of break through and have a big year, that would be a big help. I don't know what sort of role they would give him if he does, but I think that would be useful. We will miss Will Harris a lot. When we still got, and I include Joe Smith in this because I think Smith is on his day is excellent. So if you've got Smith, Presley, Osuna as a back end of your relievers, I think we will win a lot of ball games. And I think in terms of what you were saying about the crowd effect, yeah, it will be a big gut check for them, especially the first month. I think the first month is going to be a real test for them, and that will show us a lot about how they are as a unit. And I think I was saying this on that PTBNL podcast that I think that they will bring them closer together because they have no other choice. There's no room for complacency. There's no room for these players to act as individuals. They will be a very tightly knit unit. It was very savvy to get Dusty Baker as the manager for this year with all the experience that he's got. Verlander and Greinke obviously have massive experience. I think that we are in a good position to sort of close the ranks and become a much more solid integrated unit to deal with what's going to be extremely hostile road games. I think from a fan point of view, really looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome to watch our guys hopefully silencing a lot of crowds all around the country. There will be games, there will be games which we lose, and then everyone across baseball rejoices like it's the second coming. Exactly. And then there will be other times when the boos are raining down and we end up victorious, and you save those boos and you drink them all in and say, yeah, so what, we're the bad guys, yeah, we dealt with it and we're leaving with a W. So I'm excited for this year. I think there's a lot to be positive about. I think there are question marks, but nothing which really strikes me as a kind of potential landmine for us in terms of our season. I think obviously it's going to hurt losing Gerrit Cole. I mean, that's just factual. I mean, we can't, there's no point even kind of debating that. But at the same time, we've still got, like I said, great rotation. I think nearly any team would switch to the guys we've got. There's only probably two or three that wouldn't. So yeah, I mean, I'm ready to go.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited. I'm ready for real games to start.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is that, I mean, at the floor level, there's going to be 60 times on the internet where Twitter and the national media are going to be throwing parades because the Astros lost. I mean, if we win 100 games, we're going to lose, 60 to 62 yep. times. It's going to be annoying. It's probably going to be annoying for us, for the fans mm. and especially at Apollo Media, where hopefully we'll be, big then, but we'll just have the trolls in the mentions. But I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's someone, typing on 240 characters just to type and get that energy out. But I'm like, we're going to lose 60 times. There'd be 60 times throughout the year where it's, you know, it's a parade on Fifth Avenue because of, you know, what the Astros kind of brought on themselves. But I mean, they're going to roll with it. And like we said, and I think this team being in October veterans, the way they are, having seasoned veterans, having a manager that's gone through scandals and how to navigate ships that way. I'd be the first one to tell you that I didn't want Dusty, but he's worn on me just because of the way he handles himself, the way he's going to handle the team. I'm all in now, but it's I just want the game to start, man.
Yeah, definitely. I think with Dusty Baker, one thing to not kind of underemphasize is the fact that he wants a championship. I mean, for his career, I mean, I think he's got unfinished business himself. So, I think it's not something naturally, it's not something that's taking the kind of the headlines. But if we get in a position whereby we are knocking on that door again, he'll be as motivated as anyone. It doesn't matter, you know, 70 years old or whatever. That will not have an impact. He will be extremely driven to try and to sort of get that off his back. So, yeah, I think it's funny you talk about the Twitter trolls. You ever find that the ones who are trolling have they almost all have like less than 50 followers? It's really strange. It's like they log on just to do that. And I sort of after a while when the punishment broke, you're just looking at you stop responding to them because you think, I'm only going to respond to the people whose opinions are actually worth responding to. Like if someone I respect comes at me with something on that, I'll give them the time of day. But if it's some random person with like 3 followers on Twitter, they can say what they want. I really don't care.
Yeah. I mean, and it's almost like the cool thing to do is to hate on the Astros. So let's do it. Type of mentality. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. I don't know if these people have never played the sport before or know the history of the game, but like, I'm not giving an excuse. The Astros treated, we got caught. We got ratted out. We got caught, whatever it is. Mm. Yeah. We got the punishment. We're taking it, but the game's always had cheating in his DNA. I mean, from when I played at 10 years old, we tried to pick up signs and tip them in. I mean, obviously we didn't have cameras. We didn't bang on trash cans. We didn't do the extra steps, but the fabric from the very beginning, you're trying to find whatever edge you can. You're playing one of the hardest, probably the hardest sport on the globe. You have to hit a round ball with the round bat that's coming at you at 100 miles an hour, and you have less than 3/10 of a second to think about what pitch is coming at what speed at what location, and you're trying to find whatever edge you can. I have a quick little story. In college, we had our catcher got suspended the last game of the regular season. So first round of our conference tournament, he had to sit out the game. So even then, and it's funny because we talked about it in our group message that we still chat on, and he was going to try to pick up the signs from the coach from the outfield because he was suspended. So he was off to the side at our little beer garden. And he had one of those horse heads, one of those costume horse heads. And he would put the horse head on if it was a fastball, and he'd have it off if it was a curveball, if you picked up the signs. Amazing. I mean, and it was right in our, you know, as a right-handed batter, it was right down, you know, the right field line, and we could see him. And so we had almost like a scheme going on, trying to find signs. And obviously he got too drunk on the beer garden where he had the helmet on the entire time. I was like, well, this dude just threw me 3 curveballs in a row. Like, it's not a fastball coming, but it's things like that. We were, you know, in college trying to find ways like that. And so it's not pure, but I mean, like, it's part of the game. But you gotta wear it on the chin, and that's what they're going to do. And they're going to hear it. They're going to hear it pretty loudly in every stadium they go to for the first few months, like you said. But I'm excited to see how they're going to react to that.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very salient point to raise about the history of baseball. I mean, you're talking about doctored baseballs, cork bats, betting, PEDs, you name it. I mean, honestly, as much as we love baseball, it has a pretty sordid history going back, you know, well over a century. So, I think particularly, I think a lot of fans of other teams would do well to read that Sports Illustrated article that was by Tom Verducci, which chronicled over 100 years of illegal sign stealing in baseball from all manner of different teams, ones with literal buzzers, not made up buzzers, and all kinds of other things, telescopes and towels over the outfield fence or whatever. And I think it's naive for people to just try and aim it all at the Astros. Yes, what the Astros did was wrong, unequivocally wrong, and there's no two ways about that. But I think the problem is that the Astros have been scapegoated for what is a wider issue, and the fact that you have so many different respected baseball writers, Jeff Passan, Ken Rosenthal, Craig Calcaterra, Tom Verducci, Reverend Drellick, and others, they've all mentioned the fact that it's believed that a number of high-profile teams engaged or maybe even still engage in illegal sign stealing, and the fact that it's the Astros that have been popped for it is and with the kind of view that the Astros are this kind of ogre in baseball is a bit hard to swallow, really, because like you said, we take the punishment on the chin and the reaction that follows as it is, but then when the media kind of hypes it up further and whips everyone up into a frenzy to try and drive this issue of the Astros being everything that is wrong with baseball, that's not really something that we're prepared to take as Astros fans. There comes a point where you stick your feet in the ground and you say no more, and you don't let what isn't kind of affected by that in terms of the team be besmirched and slandered in a way which isn't right. I mean, it makes me sick to see the way that Altuve is being treated. Let's face it, as far as everyone in the team is saying, he wasn't even involved in the scheme itself in 2017. Yeah, sure, he didn't speak out about it, so of course you get associated with it. But he didn't do anything himself, and the whole Buzzergate saga.
That's ridiculous.
It's insulting to the intelligence, and I just despair the people who ate up the sort of John Boy speculation threads,
yeah,
line and sinker, and it's got to the point now where Altuve's career is affected by it, because people will now say that about him, despite the fact that there's absolutely not a shred of truth in anything that was said. So, it's hard not to get angry about it, because I'm sure I speak for pretty much every Astros fan on the planet. I love Jose Altuve, and I think he's it's the word legend doesn't do him justice, coming from his background, coming from
absolutely
Venezuela and being the whole story about being told not to come back by the coaches and then coming back and fighting his way through and proving himself again and again and again and making it to the highest level in baseball and succeeding and being an absolute wrecking ball in the majors despite being listed 5'6", but it's probably smaller than that. I mean, honestly, the guy is unbelievable, and it makes me so angry just to see what kind of treatment he's been given.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, George, I said I was 6'1", and I'm 5'10 and a half. I bet I was 6'1" in cleats. In cleats, you get that extra inch and a half. So I don't know. I mean, like you said, Altuve is probably not all of 5'5", 5'6", but he's the best hitter in the game. Him and Trout. Awesome. But
he's awesome, man.
I really don't think we're having this conversation today if the Astros, say, beat Minnesota Twins in the ALCS and then beat the Cincinnati Reds in the World Series. I think the only reason why it is what it is because the Astros beat the Yankees and then they beat the Dodgers. And they've done that over the – I mean, we're the Yankees' daddy right now. And
three times.
It's the easiest to say it. I mean, in this last decade, we've owned them in the biggest moments. And I don't think it's this hysteric, this – Buzzergate, all this stuff, if it wasn't for who we beat and their audience and what they stand for. But we did. We beat them, and here we are. I'm excited to play them. It's even more juicy now that Garrett Cole's is in Yankee pinstripes. Mookie's now a Dodger. I would love to run back the whole 2017 ALCS and World Series going against those two teams, because we could troll on our end and make fun of Cole's start today with four homers. I mean, he's still one of the best pitcher in the game, probably, and going into his prime. But I mean, it's going to be fun. It's going to be there's more drama, obviously, but
absolutely,
it's going to be a must watch baseball. I don't know. I try to watch everything, like I said in the last podcast. Every at bat, every game's must watch TV because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you have some rookie that comes in that's going to throw at Altuve's head because he was in college when the Astros won the World Series. Like, it's going to be hysterical at some points, but I love the atmosphere. I think it's going to be honestly great for baseball. I think Minute Maid Park's going to be rocking. I think every time they come back home, it's going to be an absolute madhouse.
I think it has to be because I think as the fans see the reaction to the Astros around the rest of the country, they will certainly redouble their efforts to make Minute Maid Park a proper fortress and make it incredibly unpleasant for visiting teams. Obviously, within the boundaries of reason, not talking about violence, just in terms of just as a noise level. And I think, I'm pumped for it. Honestly, I even from afar, I think it's going to be awesome to watch. And I'm ready to see our guys, you know, step up to that challenge on the road, and then look to continue the incredible home form we had from the regular season last year. And I just have an immense amount of faith in their abilities as a unit. I mean, the one thing which we all need to be better at this year is when we're trailing in games. Late on, I think we didn't overcome a single deficit from the seventh inning onwards last season, which was ultimately probably our downfall, to be quite honest, because as soon as we went behind in game seven, we never looked for a second like we were going to mount some sort of late fight back. So it's strange. That was almost the key difference between 2017 and 2019. Absolutely. I mean, 2019 was probably a better team, almost definitely a better team, but
a 100 times better team.
They didn't have that steel to and a never say die attitude, which 2017 did. So it's if we can somehow get a blend of that, it will be something special.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. In 2017, no deficit felt like it was out of reach. Where in 2019, it was just like we were down one. It felt like we were down 10. And I was at game seven, and I kid you not, George, I moved into a new house that day, and the sound of Howie Kendrick's ball hitting that foul pole echoes through my house. It still haunts me to this day. Like I'll be here at the house, and I'm like, I can hear the thud. I can hear the echo of it.
Yeah, bang. And, oh God. Yeah.
And I was like, the game's over. I mean, as much as how I was in 2017, I was like, I'm not nervous at all. As soon as that happens, like we can't. It's weird. It's weird how the game works. Like you said, I think that 2019 team was 1,000 times better than that 2017
best team ever. And, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sickening, but it's exciting for 2020. The boys are gonna bounce back. We're gonna be back in October again. But I have a little Twitter segment. We asked some of the fans to reach out, ask some questions. I have a few for you before we wrap up. I know it's 1:17 over there.
It is indeed. I'm good. Don't worry with me. I'm good.
All right. The first one's from @LondonTitan. He goes, if you could give one major league player a one-way ticket into space, who would it be and why? Note, you're not allowed to say Mike Fiers. Side note, editor's note, this is not an Apollo Media rocket. This is just a hypothetical.
Cody Bellinger, for his expression on his face during that interview in the locker room, honestly, boo-hoo, be gone. Off to the moon or wherever. Right. Bam.
Sending Belly. I will agree on that one. I'll say Bellinger as well. I have another one from Mr. David Silva again. He goes, how's the other Major League Baseball fans in the UK handling the Astro news? So I guess the fallout when the news broke, what was happening over there?
It's pretty similar, to be honest. I think not as fully venomous as the response from US baseball fans, but no, it's been pretty similar. I've had a few fairly heated debates over WhatsApp in various different baseball groups that I'm in. It's not been easy. It's been especially because I'm slightly more isolated, obviously, in terms of those kind of discussions. So I'm kind of having to stand up for the Astros whilst at the same time obviously try and take it on the chin for 2017 as well. It's quite a difficult kind of balance to find, because obviously I will always defend our guys, but obviously not on things which they've been caught red-handed for. So yeah, I mean, I think particularly the Dodgers fans have been it's just Dodgers and Yankees, to be honest. I don't know, it's just the same as it is online. You may be across the ocean, but it's exactly the same situation. A lot of Yankees fans, in my opinion, unwisely trying to load up on the Astros, because I don't think the Yankees have really any complaints. They didn't, you know, the four games we won in 2017 against them, they didn't score, you know, they scored, was it three runs? So I don't think they have much of an argument there. They didn't play well enough in those games. And with the Dodgers fans, I get it, but at the same time, articles like I forget who wrote it, the one that came out yesterday that was looking at the specific ways in which Game 5 and a few others unfolded and trying to assess whether there could have been much impact on that. And I placed a lot of faith in what Carlos Correa was saying to Ken Rosenthal when he was breaking down how each run was scored, to try and say that these were situations where it couldn't have been implemented, what was being done. I mean, I personally don't understand how, with Minute Maid Park being as loud as it was, even, you know, even not being there, you could tell it was unbelievably raucous in 2017. I don't see how it could have been heard if there was a trash can being banged. It must have, you know, or anything else. I get why Dodgers fans feel the way they do, but even over here, but it's not, you know, I don't agree with it at all, and I have to try and kind of traverse that balance between not aggravating fans over here, but also defending our guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the game. I was at game five. I wasn't at the Ridge Hill game. I was at the other one. Yeah. So two of the three in 17. The Minute Maid has never been that loud. And I caught some people on Twitter last year saying the 2019 playoff crowd was more laid back, wasn't as raucous as it was in 2017, which I think is factual. But it was game five to this day. Every song that they played in between innings, it was a party. Like, people were singing, people were jumping up and down. It didn't matter we were losing. It was a nonstop atmosphere. And to being a competitor and never playing in a crowd that big, obviously, or that, but even playing in a smaller scale, like, if a crowd is loud, like, I personally, to me, like, I would just zone in and I wouldn't hear anything at all. Like, it would just be me and the pitcher. It would just, you know, two gladiators in the arena. And I would just zone out. So to hear to say that the trash can banging was happening there, and they might have been doing it, I don't know. You can't give them the benefit of the doubt anymore. But there's no way they could hear that at the end of the day. 100%. It was something that I don't think, you know. Game five is still the greatest game in baseball history.
Iconic game. I'm enormously envious to anyone, including yourself.
We're gonna get you to a game.
When I get there, I would say I'm probably looking. It depends on when the schedule's released in September, but I'd probably be looking at late May next year. I was looking at late May this year, but I think it'll be around then, probably half term. It's like a week off for kids at school, so probably be looking to be able to take son and my wife then, and it'll, that's the one. So I want to try and get to as many games as possible while I am out there, but also I want to, I mean, sort of going on more of a Apollo Media angle than an Astros angle, I really want to sample Houston as well. I don't have any experience of being there, and I've heard so many great things from other UK fans who've been out there, And I have got so many great connections with Astros fans in Houston who are, you know, they sell the place really, really well. And I'm very, very eager to get out there, sample the food, sample the city, just, you know, try and actually immerse myself in Houston culture and get involved with that, because from an outside perspective, it looks like a beautiful thing.
Oh, absolutely. And the wheels in my head are already churning. We'll have a whole Astros UK video week where we just take you around Houston. You know, everyone, you can meet the Apollo Media team finally face to face. We'll take you around. We'll take your family to the games. We're gonna do a lot of good things when you get over here. So I'm excited for that. The next question, George, I have you from Josh Groves. Mr. Joshua Hill, he goes, George, have you ever gotten to actually play baseball at all, even recreation?
I haven't, as you know. Like I was saying, I played cricket for 18 years. I still want to get back to playing. I've had a kind of frustrating rotator cuff issue with my right shoulder, which has prevented me playing for the last few years. But I'm desperate to get back to that. In terms of playing baseball, no. When I was 10, bizarrely, we had at my primary school, which is elementary school for you guys. I was playing in a t-ball competition, which was kind of weird. I don't really know how that kind of came about. The team we played in won this competition. It was really cool as a little kid. But no, I never played baseball. The first time I actually swung a baseball bat in any sort of angle was actually a few weeks ago at this new place that's opened in London called Home Run House, which has got the kind of whole, it's got the cages, but they're not baseballs. They're like kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I saw it on
Twitter. I mean, it's a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, it's cool. It's absolutely not the real thing. I have to be honest, it's not even the full real thing in terms of batting cages. They did have something similar or something which was a bit more authentic, last year's London series. They had this event called London Yards where they had proper batting cages. I didn't get a chance to, unfortunately, get involved with that. I was so busy doing different events and things around then. I didn't really get a chance to do it. But I'd love to try playing baseball. There are certainly baseball teams over here. The leagues are, as you'd imagine, they're fairly sort of just grassroots-ish. The facilities aren't necessarily that great, and the standard is variable. I wouldn't really know where to begin because I wouldn't even know what position I play. In terms of cricket, I was a bowler, so obviously equivalent to a pitcher. And I was very driven in terms of what I did with that. But if I was playing baseball, I wouldn't necessarily want to be a pitcher. I think that the demands on the body are almost insane, because in cricket, when you're bowling, you run up and bowl. So the momentum, whilst it is still an unnatural action, it's slightly different from the way a pitching motion. It's like so explosive on the spot, you're not moving, and then suddenly your whole body's contorting, and the power's coming from your legs, going up through your hips, and then through your chest, and to your shoulder, and to your arm, and then releasing through your hand. It's just a, I don't know if I'd want to be a pitcher. To be quite honest, I'd probably rather see if I could
George, you just want to hit bombs and make some plays. That's what you want to do.
That's the one. So I don't know, maybe stick me up. I say stick me at first base. First is not an easy position to play, so I'd probably give that a shot. I've given a really long-winded answer to this, but I haven't played, but I would certainly love to give it a go.
That's awesome. We'll get you out on the field over here when you're stateside.
That's good.
The next question I have is from Mr. at Rowdy Roughneck. He says, George, growing up in a country where soccer and rugby reign supreme, I don't know if rugby's big in the UK, but
what
drew you towards the sport of baseball? And I know you touched on it a little earlier, but this is a little Twitter question we got.
Yeah, I think like I was saying, the pace of the game, it was like, it's cricket, but it's not cricket. It's something that a different bat and ball sport. And I love the way, as an Englishman, I love the way that things are different from just looking at the whole American perspective, the way things are in baseball in terms of just the, even the announcers. I mean, it's just everything was was kind of done in a different way that came across as quite cool. Love the uniforms, love the way that the team history is also unique and individual to the places that they represent. I mean, the great stories, and the more you kind of learn about baseball, the more you get drawn in. I think it's just something which really appealed to me. I'm not into the other major American sports, but baseball just clicked with me on every level, and I love it.
That's incredible. Let me see what else. Do we have any more questions here? I don't think we do. I think that would wrap up our Twitter segment.
Was there any questions that you want to ask me?
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on a lot right now. I mean, I guess do you have any big projects in the pipeline for Apollo Media that you're thinking through that you wanna kind of tease a bit?
I'm happy to, you know, I like collaborating with you guys, and I also like just producing content. I think probably some more content related stuff, like new shirts, new merchandise, new ideas. Well, obviously we'll see how the season goes. Sometimes like a player will make a quote which you think, wow, this has to go on a shirt immediately, and then bam, you know, it's going to be a movement. Or maybe there's a particular particular image of a player which becomes sort of moderately iconic. I think that's really the first way I'm looking at it, and I really want to be able to contribute with you guys in every way I can from afar, because it's not, you know, I sort of, without wanting to disrespect myself, I know my position. I'm not a Houstonian, so I don't want to be trying to sort of throw my weight around in an arena which is not my my sort of position to do that. I certainly don't want to be speaking out of turn. I want to help you guys in every way possible. I think it's a really, really exciting venture. I think I touched upon it in my blog piece, that it's exciting for Houston to get this type of dedicated movement behind it. I like to see the support from other outlets like Adam Clanton. I think it's really cool that he's helping as well to try and get the word out there about Apollo Media. And I think hopefully we'll build that momentum to become a bit of a snowball effect, to where things get bigger and better. And, you know, and I think in years to come, we'll be looking back and saying, wow, remember when we started this, and where we came from and to where we got to. And I think it's good that we'll be able to kind of carve our own path without, you know, and knowing not to fall into the traps and mistakes of other organizations and media outlets, and trying to avoid things perhaps like outlets like Barstool do with their kind of thing. I don't really find that a very attractive sort of way of doing things. Obviously it's what works for them, but I think in terms of what we want to do, it's as far as I can see, we want to make something that's distinctly Houston. And I just want to be on board with part of that all the way.
Yeah, I think you touched on it, kind of what we've kind of said is, I guess, our mission statement, some would say. But our vision of Apollo Media was always to be a voice for, we say, Houston sports. Obviously, Houston sports goes further than just the city limits, because it's across the country, across the world. But it's that voice that everyone can go to. They can wear our merch. They can go to Apollo, you know, Media, check out what we're saying on Twitter, what we're writing on the blog, what new projects we have. And as we grow as a company, and as we, you know, get some new projects out there, get things, acquire new people. Like today, we just announced three guys that are going to cover the Rockets for us as we play the Clippers right now. Cool. It's little cool things like that as we grow the brand, that it's not us, it's a city, it's a global, it's for everyone, and that we're in the trenches for them. It's not a Houston Barstool, it's Apollo Media. It's a total different thing. And I think everyone that we've brought along has that right vision, and it kind of is lined up the way we're thinking. And I'm excited, man. I, like you said, I just want to, in a few years, look back and be like, it's just some kids on Twitter. Look where we are now. And I can't, like I said earlier, thank you for everything you're doing. You know, we're an international company now. That's 100%. You're handling all the international side of things. So it's a really, really cool thing to say.
yeah, and just looking forward to growing, and you know, it's inevitable that there'll be bumps and roadblocks along the way, but I think that's part of the beauty of it, that, you know, the journey is the whole thing, and as long as we keep striving to expand and to learn from things that we do, and to always strive to be better, I think that the same goes for my own stuff, and I'm sure will for Apollo Media as a whole. Never to coin the 2018 hashtag, never settle. We don't settle for when we do something good. We want to try and go one further the next time. We want to always want to try and raise that bar, because people will latch onto that, and people will that will resonate with people, and they can kind of connect with that and jump on board. And I think it's a really exciting venture, and I like I said, I'm honored to be part of it, and I'm really pleased with how it started.
Yeah, thank you, George. We'll wrap it up. Well, I'll let you go to bed, man. It's 1:30 in the morning in the UK. Yeah. Oh man, I'm sorry. I'll make sure I'm not. I'm not late next time.
Honestly, that during the season, the game is just pretty much starting at this time, so don't worry about me. I've got some kind of weird sort of supernatural ability to operate off very little sleep. So yeah, I'm good.
That's great. All right, cheers, bro. We'll chat later.
Will do.
Bye.
Thank you for everyone tuning in to episode 1 of the Mission Control podcast. Thank you at Astros Future. Thank you at Astros Fans UK for taking your time out of your day to give us an interview. You guys go follow him on Twitter. Underneath this episode, leave a comment, leave a suggestion about who you want to hear next on the podcast. We'll try to get them lined up as we go along. We'll try to get more guests, have more segments for you guys throughout the podcast. Next week, we should have 2 or 3 more team members from Apollo Media, so stay tuned for that. Remember, like, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, hit the 5-star review. Thank you for following Apollo Media. Thank you for everyone listening to the Mission Control podcast. I am signing out, but I will see you guys soon.